he's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Wednesday, the midweek edition on this March 4th edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. And we are off to a mixed start, kind of a classic mixed start. Hey, wait, maybe the Dow has gone positive here. Let's see. Right now we've got the NASDAQ up 166 points. That's 0.75%. And now we don't have a mixed market anymore. The Dow's up 28 to 48,529. A lot of calm in the oil and the energy and the Straits of Hormuz, and that's soothing the market's nerves today. The S&P is up 1 point right now. The Russell 2000 is up just 2 points right now. Big rally in Bitcoin today. I got a hunch that Iran was dealing a lot in Bitcoin, and maybe they had to sell a lot of Bitcoin leading up to the wars. They knew they were going to get attacked. I don't know. That's just a theory I have. Because you're seeing a huge jump in Bitcoin today.
Maybe they had to buy Bitcoin to get it out of the country. I don't know.
It's up 5191 to 71,674. Gold is rebounding a little bit today, and oil is flat. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide. And that includes Houston, where we just spent several days down there in one of our radio markets that we are in. And now we are planning our next trip, which looks like it's going to be Sarasota. I need one more day of rest, get over the jet lag.
Yeah, right?
A three-hour difference between here and the West Coast. So I ended up in California for a few days. Went to Disneyland with my son and his wife and grandkids, and maybe one more day and I'm back to normal. My brain is definitely back to normal, but it's better than ever, I would say. Anyways, we've got some calm in the markets today after a pretty big sell-off yesterday. There was a fog over the market yesterday. Are we going to be drawn into a big, long conflict? I would just say that that's the last thing that the current administration wants, and they're going to do everything they can do to prevent that from happening. But there's still a lot of wild cards out there that we don't have control over, and we don't know what might come from some of those wild cards.
But it's interesting to note that the administration knows where that choke point is, though, especially from an oil standpoint. I saw where Bessent was speaking, I think, on a panel this morning, and you know, and mentioned, and I think the president mentioned too that you know, that if need be, they'll escort those ships through the strait if they need to. And so that's what I think they're trying to work on, that shipping insurance, as you mentioned yesterday. That's a sticking point for the shippers. So I think looks like it may not be something that's prolonged, and that's what we're seeing in the markets today in terms of some calm.
Yeah, you know, we're lucky to have Bessent. We really are.
He speaks the language, you know.
He knows the language. He knows the stock market very well. He's just a good guy to have. He also is kind of calm, you know, when things are pretty, turbulent. So, like
he's
I said,
he's got a cool demeanor to him, right? He doesn't look like he ever really gets rattled.
No,
it's the same look though every time, I feel.
You know, the longer you've been in this business, like I have been, the calmer you become, because you know they say, well, the fog of war is hanging over the market right now. Well, we had fog hanging over the Wando River yesterday. Fog always clears, right? Fog doesn't stay around forever. And it's the knucklehead that reacts to every time there's a little bit of fog over the markets and panics. That's just not the right thing to do, okay? It's just not the right thing to do.
And historically, most of these geopolitical, you know, risks, right, they tend to be faded by the market pretty quickly over time. It's you know, we're kind of the news cycle, right? Cycles through, and at some point, right, it's the market's focused on something else. Who knows? We might actually hear about Broadcom's earnings after the close today.
Yeah, and yesterday, you know, there was a big sell-off in the chips yesterday. Let me just take a look at my
big
notes.
Sell-off in Korea, right?
Yeah, I mean, South Korea, and they had to halt their market today because there was another big sell-off in South Korea. But you know what? I just don't think that it's all over for those two memory stocks that make up 50% of at least one of the South Korea ETFs. Not all of the South. There's only several South Korea ETFs. To me, that's probably a buying opportunity in Samsung and SK Hynix, which compete with Micron and SanDisk here in the U.S. because that memory shortage is the real deal. I think it's going to last for quite some time. So while South Korea may be a little closer to the action than Boise, Idaho and Micron, I still think that those are two very, very good stocks, and it's all about demand. It's all about demand. Speaking of which, you know, the defense stocks, we have depleted a lot of our stockpiles, and that means the word demand comes back into the picture because the supply is down, and there's your old supply-demand equation that has come into play here. And, you know, there's Raytheon, there's General Dynamics, there's Lockheed Martin, there's Northrop Grumman, all of those in play. The UK defense stock, which is BAESY, comes into play. And several other defense stocks down the line come into play because we've used up a lot of our stockpiles. And, you know, you just can't have too many missiles in today's world.
Definitely not too many missile interceptors.
That's no, especially missile interceptors, as we catch everything they throw pretty much. Once in a while, one sneaks through like it did in Tel Aviv. But right now you've got the demand really heavy right there. And there's a lot of chips. And semiconductors, I saw that NVIDIA got a huge order. Oh, I can't remember who it was, but thousands of, it was Akamai, ordered thousands of NVIDIA chips. I saw a big whale billionaire guy out there who is one of Tesla's biggest shareholders. He bought a ton of NVIDIA yesterday. And we will have, I have a draft of an article on NVIDIA on my desk. I'm not going to tell you what we think of it right now, buy, sell, or hold. You're going to have to wait till that comes out. And I just have to do a little bit of proofreading of it, submit it to Seeking Alpha, and you'll see where we stand on NVIDIA right now.
I was listening to a big value investor, and like they've basically never owned NVIDIA before, and they were talking about NVIDIA being, and I was talking with a client about it yesterday. I mean, your forward PE is under 22.
So. We totally agree with that assessment because the PEG ratio is about one. It's trading right at its growth rate, and we call that GARP, growth at a reasonable price. That's where you look at the PE. Let's just say the PE, what'd you say it is, 22 or something?
Just call it 22, 21.83, but we'll
call
it
22. And let's say that the growth rate is 20%. Well, you divide 22 by 20, the PE by the growth rate, and you get a PEG ratio of 1.05. Whereas you take a look at the Palantirs and the CrowdStrikes of the world, and their peg ratios are up around 4 or 5, much higher. They are not growth at a reasonable price. So I have no problem with calling NVIDIA, and we do own it
in our
relative value portfolio.
Yeah, and Premier in Procter & Gamble actually has a slightly higher forward PE ratio currently than what NVIDIA has, which is
Which one would you rather own? Which one has more upside potential? And that's the next thing is that 5-year target price, which is all important in that Best Stocks Now app. Okay, when we come back, we got a lot to talk about here today. This is the Best Stocks Now show.
I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
And welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, you know, as I went through the stocks yesterday, my first list that I go through, obviously, is what I own. That's the most important list of stocks because those are the ones that I have, you know, on the line, money invested in. And I looked at them through the when the market was down the most earlier in the day, and I chose not to sell anything because I felt like, gee, you'd be selling at a low here if you did that. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And it was very encouraging to see eventually the market cut its losses in half by the end of the day. And I would say that, number one, the administration, this administration knows what to say and what to do to calm the nerves of the stock market. The previous administration didn't really care about the stock market because it's mostly, what, rich people and billionaires in it, which isn't true. It's little guys with Roth IRAs and 401k plans and whatnot. So
pensions and union members and all kinds of things.
Yes, it's important to keep the markets calm and informed. What they don't like is, you know, not being informed, even if it's bad news. You know, what's the worst case scenario and what are we doing about it to fix it? And I think that's what probably turned the markets down around yesterday is when Trump came out and said, look, we're going to start escorting ships. Well, that creates a wild card. I mean, do they have the nerve to blow up a U.S. ship escorting a freighter through the Straits of Hormuz? So that calmed the markets greatly, cut the earlier losses in half. Okay.
And we've been cutting their Navy down pretty quickly. I think we sunk their prized ship yesterday. I know there was another ship, I think, towards the Indian Ocean that we sunk. It was the first time a torpedo, I believe, is U.S. has sunk a ship with a torpedo since World War II, so it's pretty remarkable, and I think they're pretty determined to protect those ships if they need to. You know?
Yes, and that's it's a very narrow strait.
Yeah, it'd be 30
that
miles.
A lot of traffic goes through. Okay, I'm sure you have freeways like that in your city. That's a very narrow strait with a lot of traffic at certain times of the day. So the markets came back, and the precious metals were down yesterday because you had a strengthening dollar. When money goes into the dollar, the precious metals pull back. And there was quite a bit of damage done to the precious metal stocks. So this is the second time they've sold off now during this historic rally. They had that one-day wonder sell-off when silver was down 28% on a Friday. It has rebounded, but it's not back to its all-time highs, and that meteoric run in the precious metals has definitely come to an end. It's a different animal today, and we did cut our precious metal holdings in half back along the way. I don't remember if we did that before that big historic sell-off. Yes, I think we did. But we maintain our other half. And who knows, maybe there's an opportunity to get back into some of these gold stocks that have pulled back. That's decisions I have to make on a daily basis here as a money manager. You also had yesterday, oil was up 8% at one time yesterday until we calmed the nerves, the administration calmed the nerves of the market, and oil came back and it was only up 4% by the end of the day. So, you know, and that's an inflationary thing. South Korea is selling off because they're a nation that is dependent on foreign oil coming in and natural gas to run a lot of their plants and whatnot. And all the countries that are don't have their own crude oil, in the emerging markets, I think that torrid run in Europe, this has brought that to an end. And I don't see that going back to where it was. Europe outperformed our markets last year. They've had some very bad policies over the years. Whether you think so or not, it has not helped them to be anti-fossil fuels. Okay, now maybe their air is cleaner, but you know they're having a difficult time with the prices and with the energy crunch. They have data centers too over there in Europe. There's a lot of them, and they suck up a lot of energy, and their move towards wind and solar, which is great for the planet, I suppose, and the environment, it's not good for supplying the energy that they need. And obviously you're seeing nuclear come back into the equation. I've got a story on Westinghouse coming up here in a bit. Spain totally against what Trump is doing, and he's cut off all. He told Bessent, you know, we're going to do an embargo. We're not sending you any goods for the way that you're behaving. And Canada, kind of tongue-in-cheek, they said, well, we supported it, but we're not real happy with it. And the same with the UK. So you're seeing a division in the world over this, the great division. I will cause a great division, and it's happening. In the meantime, the U.S. private sector added 63,000 jobs in February, more than expected. And we watch those weekly jobless claims reports and the monthly jobs reports, because that's where the first signs of a recession will show up. And as of now, the people on the watchtower looking for a recession, which we're always looking for a recession. There's really not much to base a recession theory on at the current time. Mortgage applications jump. We're almost under 6. The 30-year got down to 6.09. Okay.
Yeah, the refis jumped, which is a big, you know, which is a beginning to be a big deal for some of these, particularly you know, clients that we have who've been in the mortgage business, right?
Yes.
Refis have been
picking up a little.
Yeah.
Maybe you had to get a loan at 7, and now you're at 6, and now it's time to refi. But we need to get down into the low 5s, I think, to make housing a little bit more affordable, to get people moving again, to get the remodeling markets going again, to get the real estate markets going once again. And that, I know Kevin Warsh, he's determined to bring rates down. And, of course, all of this Iran stuff throws a little crimp into it. Are we all of a sudden going to have inflation coming back? Well, the biggest source of inflation would come from energy and oil prices, with gasoline going up over $3 for the first time in a long time. But that looks to be transitory. It doesn't look to be permanent. But there is some fear. Well, he wants to lower interest rates. Now he won't be able to do it. Well, if you're basing that on yesterday, one day, yes. But he's not the Fed chairman yet, and there's a few months left before he becomes the Fed chairman. So there's a lot that can happen between now and then.
And there's one thing we do know about energy prices. Is if there's one piece that's transitory, it's energy prices. So you know,
yes.
we'll see how long those energy prices remain elevated. We haven't
and
really seen it much
yet. We do have the ability to ramp up production. It does take time. That's also something that we have up our sleeve if we need it. When we come back, there's news on Westinghouse. Wait a minute, Westinghouse isn't around anymore. Oh, yes, it is. We'll be right back.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. While I was at Disneyland in Anaheim on Sunday, I remembered a lot of Westinghouse type stuff there, of the home of tomorrow, the future home of tomorrow with all the appliances and everything. And I also reminded that, you know, Walt Disney made a kind of a secret trip back to Pittsburgh and saw what was called then the Sky Bus that Westinghouse had developed, Barry, which was like his monorail that Disney built at Disneyland, and the People Mover,
which were the first
autonomous vehicles, driverless vehicles, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a little bit of infrastructure cost in building the track and everything
underneath
that it rides on.
Right.
But it inspired him. And so Westinghouse has a long and storied history. It doesn't exist anymore, except Cameco now owns 49% of Westinghouse. That's CCJ. The other 51% is owned by BEP.
Brookfield Partners, right?
Yes, Brookfield Partners. And they got a deal. There's a deal cooking here. With Japan, who is on pretty good terms with the current administration, and they want to do a deal which would give the U.S. and Japan are working to include a nuclear power project involving Westinghouse in the second round of deals under Japan's $550 billion investment package. And it may also include the big hedge fund, private equity fund
SoftBank. It's going to be SoftBank. I almost said WeWork, but that was their investment that they made that didn't go very well. Yeah.
Westinghouse, which is 51% owned by Brookfield, which is BAM and BEP. BEP is a limited partnership that requires a K-1 at the end of the year, pays a huge dividend yield, and they own 51% of Westinghouse. The downside is the K-1. I'm not sure if BAM. Look at BAM, Barry.
I'm pulling it up to see how it's structured.
And see if it's structured where you'd have to do a K-1 also.
It's Brookfield Asset Management LTD, so
that's
looks
not
like
good.
It probably
that means,
is a limited.
Yes,
part.
And then yeah. Cameco owns 49%. They're looking at building pressurized water nuclear reactors and small modular reactors totaling up to $100 billion. Several deals reportedly are under discussion, potentially to be announced when Japanese Prime Minister Takaichi meets President Trump in Washington on March the 19th. And last year, of course, the U.S. signed a partnership worth at least $80 billion with Westinghouse to build nuclear reactors, underlining Trump's goal of increasing domestic energy production. So they're a major player. Cameco also is one of the biggest suppliers of uranium in the world. Okay, and let's not forget there's good nuclear, which provides power, and there's bad nuclear, which is probably at the center of this current Iran conflict, because they want to use the nuclear they had aspirations, they had insatiable appetite to have nuclear weapons. And that's what this, you know, little incursion into Iran is all about. And, of course, you've got Kim Jong-un, who probably does not have any nuclear reactors for power, but he's got lots of nuclear warheads. There's a good side and there's a bad side.
He's got an enrichment program. No power, though. Yeah,
And he's not about to give up his nuclear weapons. The U.S. Navy warns of a Chinese undersea threat. They're building submarines like crazy that have nuclear capabilities, and they're especially warning the West Coast. So we don't have to worry about it over here on the East Coast, Barry. You know, they're going to have to hit us with missiles, not submarines. They have to go around the Horn of Africa.
Yeah, we got some Russian subs on this side of the on the Atlantic side.
Yes, so there is good nuclear and there is bad nuclear. Novo Nordisk gets another FDA warning over GLP-1 ad claims. You know, that stock is just so dang cheap. You know, we've lost some money in it since we bought it.
And we're holding it, yeah. And it's
just going to hold it. They're the only other competitor to Lilly, and the drugs are miracle drugs. So if you want to buy a down and out cheap stock, Novo Nordisk, the Wegovy pill, as far as I know, it works.
Yeah, up 4.61% today, and the P.E. ratio on that one is, forward P.E. is 10.8. So.
Now, that's not even a relative. That is a relative value, but it's also a pure value play. You would think a guy like Buffett or one of these big, deep value investors that's calling NVIDIA a value play, how can you not look at Novo Nordisk and say, holy cow, with the kind of sales they have, and the powerful, potent drug that they have, only one of two people that have it, how can you say that stock is down and out and is not going to make a comeback of some sort at some point in time? Now, Wedbush has got their same 10 stocks that they're recommending during the Iran conflict. Apple, Microsoft, ServiceNow, which I don't like any of those. They like CrowdStrike. They like Palo Alto, Checkpoint, Palantir, Planet Labs, Voyager, and Salesforce, which I really don't like. So, look, there's different ways of managing money. I'm not knocking their way of managing money, but they pretty much are permabulls on a lot of tech stocks. And they don't care if they break support and go down 50-60% from their recent highs. They kind of ride through that, where I don't really buy into that philosophy. I'm different. We sold Salesforce a long time ago when it broke its support level. It's gone nothing but down ever since. And we sold ServiceNow a long time ago when it broke support, and it still has not even come close to recovering. And it still looks bad. So anyways, and for as far as Microsoft is concerned, I saw some action in Microsoft yesterday, and I see the stock is basing now. It's not falling anymore. But the upside potential, according to the app, is just under 50%. You know, I like 80% or more. And that's another thing that I would part ways on my thinking on Microsoft with Wedbush, is that it doesn't have the 80% or more upside potential. I'd like for them to justify where they get 80% or more. I'm not saying they do. But why would you buy a stock that only has 50% upside potential over the next slide? Based on what we know now about it, instead of other stocks out there, such as NVIDIA, that have that kind of upside. Now, so I'm not knocking what they do. I just do things differently. I have to have that upside potential, and I don't like stocks that are beaten up and in number four downtrends, like ServiceNow and others are at the current time. Okay, now, you go a step further. Bank of America, here's a couple of top picks from Bank of America. You know, I noticed they don't use the name Merrill Lynch much anymore. Have you noticed that, Barry?
I don't know. I guess maybe the research arm has kind of just melded into Bank of America.
Well, I wonder if Merrill Lynch has a bad connotation. I mean, after the trouble they got in during the 08-09 financial crisis,
Still a quality maybe, logo. I like the bull, right?
But maybe I just don't see. I mean, they say Bank of America thinks the auto industry. Oh, I can't imagine a worse industry. And GM and Ford are top picks.
Yeah, I mean, they just have, I just think their execution risk, we know from talking to our clients there that it's just a tough business, period.
Yep, they lost all that money in EV. GM is still committed to 100% EV at some point in time. Ford has walked away from it and taken massive losses. Those wouldn't even be anywhere near top picks here. Not even in the auto industry. I mean, just eliminate the auto industry entirely. Okay, the whole sector. But here's the deal, Barry. They've probably got 10 people that work there that are auto industry analysts. So they got to come up with something, you know, that is a buy or a sell or whatever. But I just don't believe in having any exposure in bad sectors. And they do believe in having exposure in all the sectors. And, I mean, obviously, if you're going to own an auto stock, GM and Ford, I would take Toyota any day of the week over both of those. And then, of course, you've got Tesla, which they're jumping back in with a bull rating, Bank of America is, on Tesla. You know, I did the ride in a Tesla over the weekend, and it was totally hands-free, Barry, totally hands-free. We'll be right back. And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, Bank of America is also upgrading Tesla here to a buy. And I would just say we have an article that we recently wrote on Tesla. We have 65% upside potential over the next 5 years, which makes it, you know, not that compelling of a buy right now. But you have a wild card sitting at the CEO desk of Tesla, right? That, you know, he
just a
can
little bit.
Work
yeah,
a
or
little
robot.
Bit of magic from time to time.
Yeah, or a robot sitting at the head of a table, right? I mean, that's the other, you know, that's kind of the, that and the autonomous driving, right, are the two
yeah,
kind of
so
next growth verticals.
That is the wild card. You are investing in a guy by the name of Elon Musk when you invest in Tesla. Now, they put a $460 target price on the stock, which is currently trading at $404. It is bouncing off of its 200-day moving average right now, but it does trade at a P.E. ratio of 235. That is the bottom line. That's the premium that the market pays to have exposure, right, to Elon Musk and his creativity and what he might come up with next. So anyways, I'm sure there's plenty of things on the drawing board. He's not done yet. And at some point this year, SpaceX will come public, even though it won't be part of Tesla. But some of it, Tesla did invest in some of these private shares of SpaceX that's coming out and will be a public company soon. And also his AI venture, which is Grok. And of course, Starlink, I guess, will be a part of SpaceX also.
Correct.
And
yep.
He's got plenty of ideas. He's not done yet. It would have been like investing in Disney in the early days,
yeah.
His mind worked. Magic. The people that have taken over since have not done so well. There's been moments, but for the most part, it's been kind of a decline, a big decline. Even though it's still a fun day, it's just not what it once was. Okay, now, and I would say the biggest difference, the movies. I mean, they don't have the blockbuster movies like they used to. Now they stream all the old ones, and they've just made a lot of missteps in my book along the way. Billionaire Tesla whale buys a million NVIDIA shares. How much is a million NVIDIA shares?
Holy cow. I mean, it's at, what, 100 and, what's it, trading at 889
wow.
yesterday? It's at, what's that, $189 million,
wow.
I guess, right?
Oh, man. I mean, while it is dropping the bucket of the overall market cap of NVIDIA, NVIDIA also is bouncing off its 200-day moving average. All in all, NVIDIA has been a sideways stock now since last July. It's been trading between 165, 185. It made one breakout attempt in late October.
You got, what, then, over 200 a little bit, right?
Yep, and then it's kind of been sideways ever since. But we still maintain a large position as it is the number one stock in the number one sector in the market.
Well, remember, when we were in Houston, of course, you know, that big earnings report came out and the stock, you know, nothing happened with the stock and we're sitting there and it's thinking, you know, I'm thinking from a demand standpoint, right? The reason stocks go up is because they're being accumulated, right? And it's like, you know, I'm thinking, well, I guess if you wanted to own NVIDIA, you probably own NVIDIA. So even, you know, some fantastic earnings report isn't going to, you know, coax you into buying more because you already got a position. So maybe just everybody already owns NVIDIA.
Yeah, so guys like me are just sitting on it, right?
Right.
They have a return on equity that's incredible. Their latest quarter was incredible.
Their valuation currently in terms of P.E. ratio is
fairly
pretty incredible. Yeah,
it needs a catalyst. I don't know what that would be. It could involve China. Okay, well, China, you can have NVIDIA chips. But I really don't see a catalyst out there on the near-term horizon.
Versus maybe, like Palantir, who's got their new catalyst, right, is essentially us shooting down all these missiles, right? I mean, Palantir's having another pretty strong day when I looked at it earlier. So
that was a pretty timely buy, you know. I sold it for a huge profit.
Yes.
I let it drop 40 points, and then I got back into it in the 132 area. And that's what I do a little bit differently, I suppose, you know, from the Wedbushes of the world who just ride through a 40% pullback, 35-40%. That's a steep pullback. That's no fun.
And it was an elevated, you know, at one point it had the highest P.E. ratio in the S&P 500, remember?
Yes. But it remains the best software stock in the world today, and NVIDIA is by far the best chip stock. In their latest quarter, they had 73% growth in sales and 82% growth in earnings. That's not bad for a $4.4 billion gargantuous giant company. That's trading at a PEG ratio of 1. And it, like I say, it just needs some kind of a catalyst here. And then there's always that risk. And I think that probably also weighs on the stock. When will China say, okay, we've caught up with NVIDIA, Huawei's got the chip that does the same thing, we don't need, well, they're not buying NVIDIA chips now, so it wouldn't make that big of a difference. But if they come up with a competitive chip at a cheaper price, I don't know that U.S. companies and all these data center companies would trust a Chinese chip, to be honest with you. So anyways, it is what it is, and I'm just sitting on it. I do add to it on pullbacks down into the 170 area for new clients that come on board. Well, we are out of time. I had a lot more to talk about. CrowdStrike did report today, and CrowdStrike is basically flat. It's probably the second best software stock in the world today, and we don't own it. That never has been a better time during a time of uncertainty like this to get a level-headed approach to the market. Get a four-week trial. Go to GundersonCapital.com. And we continue to put new money to work of people that are moving their portfolios to us to have us manage them. I'm adding people to the team of money managers here, trainees, junior analysts, etc., so that this carries on way beyond me, Barry. And Barry, of course, is at the top of that list there. He's going to also be training these young guys that we're adding to the team. You can call us, set up an appointment, 855-611-BEST, and stay tuned for our next announcement of where we're headed next. 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.